Greetings to the crew of the Gaia Navigation Experiment. This is your nav, John Lash, speaking to you in the early hours of September 18th, 2012. This recording is meant to provide some spoken commentary going out with a special announcement that I'm making. In place of Crew Notes 20, which you've been waiting to see for some time now, I am releasing on through the email distribution list this special announcement. And simultaneously, material related to this announcement can be found on metahistory.org, along with an introductory talk on the Gaia Navigation Experiment. Those of you who have looked at metahistory.org over the past few months will have noticed, of course, that I have not added any written material to that site since Goddess to the Rescue. That was an essay that approached the question of an avataric type intervention from the Aeons of Fire. I relate this possibility of an avataric intervention closely to the mythology of Perseus in the Greco-Latin tradition, as well as to the mythology of Kalki, who is considered to be a male form of Kali in Hindu tradition. So that was the last written text I posted on metahistory.org. I haven't been writing much lately for a number of reasons, which I won't go into at the moment. You might also have noticed, if you checked in on the homepage of MetaHistory, that I had announced there would be an introductory talk to the Gaia Navigation Experiment, and that announcement has been floating there on the site for longer than I care to consider. Anyway, finally the moment has come to make this announcement. And as this little talk I'm presenting right here proceeds, the reasons for that being so will become evident, and perhaps delightfully evident. If this little operation goes as I wish, at the moment that you receive these crew notes in your email, you should be able to click on to gaiaspora.org and hear the recording I'm making right now. I'm calling this special edition of Crew Notes, X Marks the Spot, Here Be Treasure. This is, of course, a reference to pirates and hidden treasures and all things of the nautical nature that I personally associate with the Treasure Island film of Walt Disney and the great caricature of Long John Silver played by Robert Newton. You can find clips of that on YouTube. I looked at a couple of them lately, clips of that character and even the entire film. Most amusing to look back at that, and as happens with so many events and so much of the literature, films, and music of that era, the 1950s, the world looks terribly innocent in retrospect. And certainly the way it looks today is utterly, utterly changed, and due to be even more changed. We have entered at this very moment, September 18th, the exact midpoint of the period of initialization of correction, the 3-year period from March 19th, 2011 to the same date, roughly, in 2014. So this is the midpoint. This is the halfway mark in our little experiment. My intention in this audio commentary attached to the crew notes is simply to walk you through those notes, as it were. Let's imagine that we're all out together, strolling around on the deck of the mothership. Manav has come out of the chart room, and here we are, all the crew assembled, walking around the deck, while I talk to you of some things of intimate relevance to not only this little experiment of ours, as I call it, but very possibly the ultimate fate of the human species, if that doesn't sound too grandiose or too arrogant. On a technical point, I have attached a number of photos to this email. I don't know how they will appear when you receive the mail, whether they will be included in the text or as attachments. Also, make these photos available in a folder on gaiaspora.org, and you'll find that folder plus the link to this talk in the section of crew notes. The first photo that comes up in these notes shows you recording a section or shot of a recording I did for the GNE and the success of Pleromic Relay. And there's also a note there that the clip demonstrating the recording technique narrated by Thomas Malone is still available on YouTube if you haven't seen it yet, or if you'd like to go back and review it, there's the link. I've often said that beauty is the method of courting, and beauty is the essential element in Gaian magic. The rites of Gaian magic, which we are just barely beginning to learn, all operate by the power of beauty. The more beautiful is the action of performing the rite, or the action of doing the courting, the more beautiful you feel in the spontaneous act of courting, the more effective it will be. It's appropriate to talk of beauty right now and to keep the element of beauty uppermost in our minds and hearts. We are currently looking at a situation of two successive shifts of the Mahavidya Shodashi, also called Sundari. Sundari is simply the Sanskrit word for beautiful. And as it ends in I, it's the female gender is referred. So Sundara would be beautiful applied to a man, Sundari to a woman. And whatever your aspirations in life, it might be worth considering the wish to be not just beautiful, but to actually be beauty, to be the living embodiment of beauty in whatever way that suits you. And of course, if you take that aspiration upon yourself, if it feels right to you, if it thrills you, you need to realize that the standard of beauty, the ultimate standard of that beauty which you would embody, can only be measured in relation to the earth itself and within the framework of the earth story, the Sophianic vision story. It is a beauty relative to the earth. It is not a beauty isolated or in any sense separate, and not a beauty that stands in any way on its own. So the beauty you can achieve in your life, in your mind, in your actions, in your imagination, is supported by the beauty on which you stand. And that is the planet on which you stand. And if this planet is not the most beautiful planet around in our region of the galaxy, then I don't know what is. And I have looked around, believe me. So I speak of beauty here in the mood and theme of Shodashi, Sweet 16. And I speak of the beauty such as you see in the turbulence and complexity of a courting. Because that is a good example in concrete and visual terms of the beauty of our lives when considered as a network of relationships, a network, a weave of human connections. We had a shift of the Mahavidya Shodashi kicking off on the 18th of August and ending just recently on the 16th of September, with the second shift beginning on the 17th. So as I speak, we are eminently due to see the sunset crescent in the Virgin marking or signaling the beginning of a Shodashi shift. Due to the huge extent of the constellation of the Virgin, which is a stretch of 45 degrees on the ecliptic, maybe even 48, that's 1/8 of the entire extent of the ecliptic. Due to that size, it's not unusual to have two shifts of Shodashi. But the way that it happens this year is particularly interesting and has some exceptional and intricate features which are worth looking at. So I devote the first part of this special edition of Crew Notes to looking at those features. First of all, I want to point out that the completion of Pleromic Relay happened on September 7th, and this was in the last 9 days of the first Shodashi shift. What can we draw from this fact? Well, whatever relay may bring to us, the one thing that we would like it to bring above all else is the assurance that we can live our lives in beauty. And safety and security as well, of course. But security is such a corrupted term and has been used in such a pernicious and disingenuous manner by the predators and the psychopathic control freaks running around on this planet that I hesitate even to say that word. Nonetheless, we are animals. Humans are animals like all other animals. We are herd animals, and also some of us, not all, are pack animals. And whether you're a herd animal, that is to say, you find your identity in the reflection of your behavior with the collective, or whether you're a pack animal, like myself, who finds identity in behavior relative to only a small group of other animals and not relative to the collective. In either case, you are an animal on this planet, and like all other animals, you desire and require safety in order to live. Safety and security, to use that utterly corrupted word. Well, there's a paradox regarding safety and security for the human animal, a huge paradox, that is due to our endowment, about which I intend to be speaking at great length in the coming months. Due to the calibration of our endowment, due to the seven factors in that calibration, which were known in the Hindu channelings of the rishis as the saptaparna, or the seven-leaved plant, due to that endowment, which makes the human animal what it is, we have a vast latitude that other animal species do not enjoy. This latitude, which can be called conative latitude and correlated to the aeon celete, allows us to go wild, basically, and does not require us to remain closely restricted to a pre-formulated instinctual program, as you see demonstrated in the behaviors of many other animals, from elephants to monarch butterflies to microbes and amoeba. So, that being so, having that great latitude, we can take risks and do take risks. And so, although we require, as animals, safety, we are always putting our safety at risk. And it is impossible to have the freedom enjoyed by the human animal without risk. So one of the big cons of the globalist predators, and one of the main ploys they use in their fraudulent war on terror, is to claim that by taking away the freedom of human animals, they are providing them security. That is an absolutely impossible claim. It is impossible to deliver on that claim. It is totally fraudulent. It is impossible to provide security on those terms, because the very fact that the human animal is free with a vast latitude for experiment and discovery demands that we face risk. Life itself for the human animal is never entirely secure, and you could say less secure for us than other animal species, but in a way more secure because of what we are capable of doing in culture and in the organization of human society. So it's a wonderful fact that human animals can create tribal, social, and collective structures, and that within these structures they can find a safety. But ultimately, you cannot be free and absolutely safe at the same time. And freedom itself is not even free. So there is a risk that comes with the necessity of defending freedom. And defending freedom will always be, sooner or later, a dangerous proposition. And it looks like the human species as a whole is coming around a bend very sharply into a massive collision with that proposition. But at the same time that all this is unfolding, so is correction unfolding. And the power of human imagination in connection with the divine Sophia is incalculable and unimaginable. All bets are off. There is no way for anyone to guess or even estimate where this experiment is going to go from this moment on, now that Pleuromic Relay is fully operational. But I would say that during the first, I would just share with you my reflections and insights drawn from the first Shodashi shift, which have been reinforced, are being reinforced as we now enter the second shift. I just want to say that beauty sustains this experiment, and beauty sustains all of us who are gathered into it. We are part of a network spread across the world. I have the world map right here with the points in the map, little tacks I have put in the map showing the distribution of crew members all around the planet. We are a network distributed around the planet, and the network has two kinds of fibers. The fibers that are deployed between those of us who do not meet physically, and the fibers that are developed and deployed between those of us who do. I can make this special announcement now because of a change in my personal fate that may also affect the way this experiment proceeds. I can make this announcement because there is now a place for the crew to gather. Now, all of the crew, as it exists now or may come to exist in the next 18 months, will not gather all at once in this place. Probably not. And some of you who would like to come may not be able to do so right now for one reason or another. So there's a likelihood that some of us, let's be realistic, some crew members in this experiment will not meet each other and will not meet the navigator, but some will. But in both those cases, the coherent power of this experiment is the same. The coherent power of this experiment resides in the connections of beauty that stretch between us, the connections of beauty that play between us. And everything done in this experiment, either in direct physical presence to each other or at a distance, is an expression of that beauty. What I've noticed recently is that, and I did comment on this, I think, in a NAB briefing, is that when two human animals meet and they find beauty with each other, between, entre nous, as we say in French, entre nous, between us, when two human beings find that beauty, it's a great treasure. And it is the ground resonance for many opportunities, many, many things to happen. And sometimes that beauty can be lost. But the fact that it is even there in the first place is already a miracle beyond reckoning. The fact that it is there in the first place always points back to the same fundamental truth, and that is that beauty is her way. Her priorities are aesthetic, and all that proceeds in the aims and designs of the divine Sophia proceeds through the beauty in us, between us, around us. The triplicity of beauty. Everything proceeds in that. So I am grateful even for those connections which were lost, usually always for the same reason, because of the interference of the ego in false pride, and because the ego cannot receive. My feeling of this timing in which pleromic relay becomes operational during a Shodashi shift, followed by a second one, is simply this, that Sundara, the beautiful one, is you, as you receive and give everything that flows through you. But do it mindful of her presence. Mindful of her presence. There is never any more just a relation and a meeting of two people, man to woman, man to man, woman to woman. No, there are always three entities involved. That's a principle of Tantra, as you know. And I get a feel for Shodashi here, that she is, as it were, she oversees and guides all our relations. To use that wonderful term from the Native American Indians, all my relations overseen and guided by this spirit of beauty, this Mahavidya. It's the only thing that counts. It's the only thing that works. What is beautiful is good. What is good is beautiful. And everything that is done against humanity and to harm the Anthropos and all living species and to violate and betray the spirit of this experiment is just plain ugly. And you don't have to break your mind about it. It's not a brain teaser. What is ugly looks ugly. And whatever is ugly cannot be a part of this, cannot be a survivable or sustainable part of this experiment. So I wish you all to find beauty and to be found by it. I wish that it finds you supremely in everything you do. And in all the life connections that now bind us to each other, may that power of beauty be discovered and expressed, and may it thrive. So, as I reach the midpoint of this commentary, just let me summarize the opening pages of the crew notes, indicating current and coming events which are vividly signaled by the celestial omens. You'll see the crescent moon for this Dakini shift in the constellation of the Virgin, if you're lucky. And also nearby will be the star Spica, and the moon will actually pass in front of the star Spica. That's an occultation, as you know, although it won't be visible probably in most parts of the world. Saturn is positioned about 4 or 5 degrees from Spica, where it has been lingering now, as you know, for quite a few months. And its shift in the order of the constellations, that is from right to left or eastward, now becomes visible week by week. But it still remains in the Virgin for quite some time. And Mars plays a part in the display of the evening sky. Mars has shifted into the scales, and there will be a conjunction of Mars and the Moon at 11 p.m. Universal Time on the 20th, and that would be in the right pan of the scales. On the preceding day, the 19th, there is that momentous perigee hit in 8 degrees of Scorpio at Kambalia, the alchemist star. I've described that at some length in the crew notes. I don't need to elaborate any further, except to say that whatever it is, it's something momentous that is preparing the end of the kalpa, something concerning how the divine Sophia is preparing the end of this kalpa, the next 2 centuries to come. And more specifically, I would guess, how she is recalibrating the anthropos to bring forth a transmutation of our species from anthropos 10, which is the strain that began this current experiment, to anthropos 11, the strain that is due to recommence this experiment on entirely new terms at the beginning of the next kalpa. Those of us in that special band of human animals who are engaged in planetary tantra have a preview. We are, as it were, in the avant-garde of the calibration of anthropos 11, if you want to put it that way. Just like to point out that we have a lot to anticipate in coming events. It will be possible to observe the transit of Mars through the scales over the next week or so. And then eventually Saturn enters the scales. As I point out in the notes, the completion of the initialization of correction is signaled by the location of Saturn at the fulcrum of the scales in the spring of 2014. But well before that, coming up quite soon, next month in fact, it appears likely that there will be a Dakini shift under Vishvamata. That is to say, peeking ahead, estimating the cosmic factors or the celestial display, I would say that there's a very good chance that the crescent moon of the next shift occurs in the scales, which is a narrow constellation of only 20 degrees in extent. That being so, we would have a relatively rare experience of a Dakini shift under Vishvamata. And, well, it's anybody's guess what that would mean, but I think it's quite significant considering the activity of the lunar perigee in the scales, considering the immense importance of the scales as they reflect human conscience, and in another respect, as they present to us an archetypal image of commerce, economy, the balance between the currencies or the measures in an economy and the actual things to be measured, the left and right pans, respectively. There's a tremendous learning experience coming from the observation of the scales, as you all know. And I've pointed out that that learning experience stems back to an intentional act of the Telestai in the 5th century before the Christian era. That was the moment when they actually taught the visualization of the stars in that region between the Virgin and the Scorpion. They taught that visualization. None of these visualizations occur spontaneously. Anyone who takes a few days, a few evenings, looking at the evening sky will realize that, with the exception of the Scorpion and perhaps one or two others, none of the signatures of the constellations actually look anything like what they're supposed to be as an animal or as some kind of mythical creature, including human forms like the twins and the water bearer. So how come we see them in that way? We see them in that way because due to the exercise of a higher method of imagination people were taught to see them that way. People in the mysteries were taught to see them that way. And eventually that way of seeing filtered out and became part of folklore and part of the collective understanding of how to view the skies and how to orient oneself to our cosmic environment. So it's remarkable that the scales play such a decisive role in correction, as you would guess would be the case. And the wisdom goddess resets the scales. And that reset happened not too long ago, around the 23rd of August. And the entire world, know it or not, is currently living in the consequences of that reset. But what's coming up with a Dakini shift in the scales ought to be extremely illuminating in that regard. So that is something exciting to anticipate. Now I'd like to go directly into the matter of some personal events, if you want to call them that. I do appear to have a personal life still. Some personal events that have unfolded over the last couple of months. And I suggest that these may be shift events, which are in some way indicative of the operation of cosmic, of pleromic relay. I mean, why not, you know? I'm sure that many of you wonder how and to what degree the completion of pleromic relay might change your life or in some way impact the conditions of your life. So I'll report on that from my own experience for what it's worth. During the summer, I think it was during the month of June, actually, or maybe it was July, I can't remember, I signed a contract with an Italian publisher for the Italian translation of Not in His Image. And to my amazement, they set the publishing date as December 21, 2012. I've attached to the crew notes an image of the cover that was designed for the book. There you see the title in Italian. I provided to the publisher a photograph taken off the web of the Egyptian goddess Hathor, she who is often shown with cow's ears. And it was a striking photograph of a frontal image of Hathor with her banded hair, also typical of her style, and in a lovely bronze or golden color. One of the artists or editors at Uno Editori concocted this melange, and that is what you see on the cover. That is what will be seen by many, many Italians who can bear to look at it on the cover of this translation of Not in His Image. That, of course, is a great event, and it's another step in the process of getting Not in His Image out in translations into other languages. Additionally, throughout the summer, my associate from Madrid, Ignacio, has been working diligently at the translation of Not in His Image into Spanish, and I understand he's already completed half of it. You can imagine it's a massive job, the 25 chapters plus the introduction, the footnotes, the glossary, whatever. I'm extremely grateful to Ignacio for his dedication here. I didn't ask him to do this. This is all voluntary. Arrangements for compensation are to be made as events proceed. Also, you may know that for some time now, there has been a French language translation entitled La Passion de la Terre, and I provide a link to that on the site Libertaire, which is run by my colleague and friend Dominique Guillet. So, not in his image in French, coming out in Italian, Spanish to follow probably next year. What have I done? I've nailed the three biggest Roman Catholic countries in Europe. And this is a good start. A translation of into Romanian is underway, by the way. What I am looking for is not much more than that. I don't have a lot of grandiose designs. I do want to hit Germany, of course. As I mentioned before, curiously, I almost never hear anything from people in Germany. I don't even know if there are any crew members in Germany, but I would most definitely like to make a nod in his image connection in some German publishing field. So I would be happy if we got German, if I got German and Russian. Most happy indeed. And we'll see about that. The Russian connection, as you know, is deep and close to my heart. I'll speak about that in another context in a moment. The Russian connection, the Russian genius, the role of Russia in bringing or holding, you could say, preserving in a sense, the Sophianic vision of the mysteries is an immense, immense part of our planetary tribal history. And that story must be told loud and clear. And I intend to do so in one way or another. So plans are afoot on several fronts for the Russian connection. In the meantime, if you check out one of the clips posted on Gaiaspora.org, you'll see that Alexandra Shevchenko of Femen could possibly be considered as the Kalika poster girl for planetary tantra. It's good to consider, not more than good, it's essential, it's imperative to consider how the Russian and American people could come together in an understanding that they are sister souls and that they both carry, in a particular way, powerful elements of the Sophianic vision and could, in fact, by realizing those elements, could, in fact, turn this experiment completely in another direction and save it from the globalist predators. So there's an interesting drama unfolding there. More about that in the coming months. Speaking of all things Russian, jump to the next personal event in my life of some significance and possibly relating to the difference made in our world by pleromic relay, and that is scriptophrenia. Now, scriptophrenia is a name I invented about a year or so ago in discussions with my colleague, Canadian colleague, Madonna. Now it is a website. You'll see the link there. It's a very special kind of website. We're doing something very daring and radical. We're doing something that, just isn't done. We're doing something that just isn't done. And that is to say, try to sell story ideas or offer story ideas, movie ideas. Why have Madonna and I resorted to this strange tactic? Simply because since Sabina was written in November 20, 2002, that's 10 years ago, there have been at least probably two, if not three, attempts to steal it. So when you're in the screenwriting business and you're in the movie business, you, of course, face the risk that people will steal your script or steal your story. So I said to Madonna, hell, why don't we turn the game around and instead of facing the risk of having it stolen, let's face the risk of selling it to the people who would steal it from us anyway if they could. This is a lovely project. I'm excited about it. Madonna is doing the greater bulk of the work here, and she'll be managing the website. The first formal act of schizophrenia is to publish in a small limited edition a page-by-page facsimile of my script, Sabina, based on the true life story of Sabina Spielrein, who was the first mistress of C.G. Jung and a close associate of Sigmund Freud. She is, without question, the single most significant woman who figures in the origins of modern psychology and psychoanalysis. And once her story is told, the story of those origins never, ever looks the same. So the story of Sabina is not something that I am putting out to you, to the crew, simply because I have your ear and I have your confidence and I have your trust, and therefore I'm going to peddle my screenplay to you. I talk about Sabina and will continue to talk about this screenplay because it is more than just a movie. It is a breakthrough story. One of the things that must happen in the next 18 months, if correction is to make a difference in the social and collective behavior of humanity, is that the narrative of deceit must be broken. Socially and collectively, the human herd is running on a narrative of deceit. And Sabina is not just a beautiful love story to be developed on the silver screen. It is also an indictment of that narrative of deceit. And it is a weapon to use against that narrative of deceit, and a kind of cinematic semtex that can blow that narrative of deceit apart in a most dramatic and powerful fashion. And so that is why I consider this screenplay to be of the utmost importance at this particular time in the initialization of correction and in this particular moment that pleromic relay becomes operative. And if you look on Scriptophrenia website, you'll see that there are also a couple of other screenplays that we likewise intend to produce to be read as a book. And one of them is Dr. Sachs, an adaptation of a novel by Jack Kerouac. Madonna and I wrote that screenplay here together in 3 weeks in May 2010. The third screenplay that will be forthcoming in printed form from scriptophrenia.com, if I achieve my intentions, will be American Grail. And that is my adaptation of Wolfram von Aschenbach's story of Parsifal, told as a cowboy and Indian adventure story set in the 1880s in the American West. Oh, in case you're wondering, all of these cinematic properties, both the two completed screenplays and the treatments, as they're called, the complete treatments for those three screenplays, have been registered with the Writers Guild of America. And so this material is protected, and therefore I can talk about it openly. And were anyone to try to steal this material or copy it or plagiarize it, I have proof by the registrations of these properties of propriety, and in some cases could probably make more money suing someone who steals a movie than you can from or tries to steal the movie than you can from making the movie itself. But it's my wish that it doesn't work out that way. And I bring my highest intention to these films and to the ultimate production of these films, so that they get out there through that powerful facet of human imagination, which is the cinema. Now, speaking of films, speaking of these properties, I come around to the final item of this special edition, of this commentary. And that concerns the fate and the future of my work. Now, I'm not just the navigator of the Gaian navigation experiment, as you know, but I also have another hat that I wear, the black hat of the Dukpa, you could say, although I never wear hats. But metaphorically speaking, the role of the Turton. And a Turton is, of course, a treasure finder, someone who finds treasures which are then delivered in the form of termas, terma being the Tibetan word for wisdom treasure. So, for my life, since the age of 4, when I first met my guardian Kali, I've been directed on a course of experiences, as you know, as recounted in Severed Rose. On a course of experiences that has led me to certain discoveries. So I would say that the treasures that I've accumulated as a Turton consist of two kinds. One are the pure earth treasures, such as the term of Gaia Awakening, the Gaia Sapiens Exchange, Planetary Tantra and Kala Tantra, and so forth. The real essential Sophianic material. And additional to that is a second class of termas or treasures, which are more like spin-offs. So you could say that the Sabina screenplay or the American Grail screenplay, which has yet to be written, are, as it were, spin-offs of my Turtonic experiences. But both of these types of properties, both of these types of treasures are real and concrete properties, and they belong somewhere. They need a home, and they need a place to be stored, to be preserved, and a place where people can come and investigate them or even receive them. That is to say, a place where they can be transmitted and, to use the operative term, handed over. Now, over the last few years, I've troubled myself a lot about this question of handover. It's a question of inheritance, really, that concerns anyone like myself who has no children. I suppose that people typically leave things to their children, and that solves the problem of what they would do with their properties, be it a house, land, or even their intellectual properties, things of that sort. I don't have that solution. One item that has caused me a great deal of concern in this regard is my library and my collection of research and notebooks and personal archives, which I'll just refer to as my library and archives. Well, this is a mass of material things, actually stored in about 98 boxes and four large plastic coffers. I don't know how many books there are, but you'll see here, if you scroll down on the through the crew notes, that I have listed the different categories of books. I estimate there might be 3,500 books. I don't know. It could be 5,000. And additional to these books, there are a few dozen notebooks and a great deal of drawings and diagrams and research material. Most of it on the subject of astronomy and sky lore, precession, the world ages, the zodiac, cosmological systems, timing of the planetary conjunctions. There's just a massive amount of material, research material on those items. And for years I've wondered what to do with it all. Basically, I don't refer to it anymore. I don't delve into it anymore. But it's there. It's a large collection of books and archives, and it's been looking for a home. Well, it so happens that during the first Shodashi shift, on Saturday, August 4th, to be precise, I got confirmation that a place to house my library and archives and to display and deploy them for use is available. And it is available with certainty for a year with an easy extension into a longer period of time. I can't say that this would be the absolute permanent and final repository of my library and archives and other aspects of my particular legacy on this planet. Nothing is permanent, you know, and I myself live in a permanent state of impermanence. But as far as the opportunities of the moment go, and as far as relative permanence is concerned, this looks like a pretty safe bet. Now, before I have the pleasure of telling you about Ambergane House, I want to read something that I wrote during the Idris shift at the beginning of the summer. You know, Planetary Tantra is a really unique practice. It stands by itself, but it also relies on an intimate connection, an interaction with the living presence of the earth, the intelligence of the divine Sophia. And the practices and principles of it are, although this may not appear so at first, they are as cogent and lucid as anything gets. And there is one practice of Kala Tantra, actually, that is to say, the advanced module of Planetary Tantra, if you will. There is one practice that I consider to be paramount, to the extent that I have accomplished this practice, I have achieved the most spectacular results, and the results and the evidence and proof of its efficacy can manifest on many levels of your life, from the small detail of things into the whole greater scheme of your destiny, and from that point outward into where your destiny scopes into the divine experiment itself. I can give you my word on that. And it so happened that during the shift of Idris, I wrote this down on a piece of paper, and I said to myself, okay, this is a way of formulating Dakini instruction. It's a way to summarize a paramount practice of Kala Tantra, of planetary or Gayan Tantra, and at some point I really need to read this to the crew. And so here it is, word for word, as I wrote it down. Hold to your highest desire and surrender its attainment, not precluding that the attainment may be given to you, rendered at their command. Now, this principle is something that I practice. It is an entirely unique form of Tantra that has never previously been taught anywhere at any time. It has no precedent. You could say that this principle, this proposition that I just read, is a way of stating what the Divine Sophia requires of you for her to realize her dream through your life. She requires that you hold to your highest desire and surrender its attainment, but not preclude that you may attain it, rendered to you by the power of the Dakinis at their command. So what this means is, I think, probably obvious, but let me just give you an example. It was, for a long time, my highest desire that my library and archives would be available to the world and that I would see it displayed and deployed in a beautiful setting while I am still alive, and that I would have the enjoyment of passing it on to other people and seeing the pleasure they have to receive it and to make it their own and to combine it with what they already have of their own. And I completely and utterly surrendered the attainment of that desire without surrendering the desire itself. Now, I ask you to stop and reflect on that nuance, because that is the key to this method, and it is the assurance or guarantee of the success of this Kalika practice, a paramount practice of Gayan Tantra. I never relinquished my desire to have my library be available in my lifetime, but I absolutely and unconditionally surrendered the attainment. However, I did not preclude that the attainment might happen, rendered at the command of the Shakti powers. Not through my own wish, not through my own will, not through my own control, certainly not. Not through my own determination. No, not through myself alone. I relinquished the attainment of that through myself alone. But I did not preclude the attainment in that connection to the planetary animal mother. And I'm here to tell you that today, as I speak to you, I can announce that attainment. This is the first moment of that attainment. And it is great, gives me great joy to share this moment with you. I won't elaborate a lot in the remaining 10 minutes of this commentary. You can read the details right here in the crew notes. But you will see that I have attached some photographs of what I am calling Ambergane House, the treasure house of the Main Turton. Now, as I note in the written crew notes, Embergain House is not my residence. I live elsewhere in the same region of the Serenia de Ronda. And it is something I would call extremely auspicious. To have this second location where my library and archives can be deployed and used, because this second location, which is very different from where I live in mood, in setting, in atmosphere, but in a way also deeply complementary, this second location provides also the magnetic center for a gathering of the crew, anyone who wishes to come, who can come, and for other people who have found their way into the practice of planetary tantra and the Sophianic vision of the mysteries. Embergain House is not just the repository for my books and archives, where they can be displayed and shared and used and discussed. It's also the setting for the handover of these properties, to use that term, setting for the handover of these properties, and therefore the place where the future course of many aspects of planetary tantra can be set by those who come and meet face to face and who take the responsibility to do so, not as a duty or as a burden, but out of the sheer enjoyment of the process and, of course, out of the recognition that you are handling sacred knowledge and sacred instruction. So, the word Embergain, as I explain, doubles also for a trust that I intend to establish. And the purpose of this trust is simply so that the location of the house and property and the activities there can be continued in perpetuity and don't rely ultimately or exclusively on my presence, or at least not my obvious presence. So it's a great relief and release to me to have found this place, which actually found me, to my great surprise, around the time that pleromic relay began to happen in the summer of 2012. So that's about all I would care to say in this spoken commentary on this special edition of Crew Notes. You'll find details, some details of the arrangements to be made for visiting Embergain House and for accommodations in the area and so forth. Also, I'm simultaneously announcing the inauguration of Embergain House on metahistory.org. So there's further information to be posted on that site. And you might want to give a listen to the introduction to the Gaian Navigation Experiment that will be linked to the announcement. What can I say in addition to conclude this wonderful moment? Do I believe that the opportunity to have this house and use it for the purposes I've stated is a reflection of pleromic relay in the practical and existential conditions of my life? Well, no, I don't believe it. I don't believe it, but I do regard it as a kind of proof. And I remain open to how that proof will continue to prove out over time. And I remain open to whatever happens. But if it is the case, let's say it sets a good example, it strikes a lovely note, a note of encouragement, I would hope, for all of you who wish to see differences in your world and in the world around you, now that this momentous event has occurred in the process of Sophia's correction. So there is much to say, there is much to discuss, and there are many activities and tasks now that present themselves for the crew as the mothership sails on into the second half of this experiment. Future crew notes and nav briefings will treat the question of tasking. And I'm calling for volunteers. Some of you have already volunteered. I haven't lost those emails. I have a list of mails of people who have volunteered. It just has to be organized. Right now, and for some time already, I have been facing far more than I can handle in charting the course of this experiment. I'm grateful for your patience and your tolerance in accepting that fact. But what a wonderful moment it is when the experiment grows to the point where it bursts into flower. And I think this is that moment. So I welcome any of you to come and visit and learn and explore, learn and teach. And I welcome volunteers who can contribute something to the many and diverse tasks that are generated by the opportunity of Ambergain House. It really represents a land base, a port for the Gaia Navigation Experiment. And from that port, we can develop and direct new aspects of the experiment. And that is really, really exciting to me. I can't express my gratitude toward you out there or toward the Wisdom Goddess herself for her divine generosity to us all. But it's fantastic to live with that inexpressible feeling of generosity. It is the buoyancy that carries the ship on its journey, on the journey of living eternity. At the point of the journey that we're now entering, I would say that the intimacy between us jumps to another dimension, and that the exchanges, personal and transpersonal, between us begin to take on some kind of really glorious aspect. It really feels that way to me. So, in closing, let me wish you, as usual, safe passage wherever you may be in your lives. And I wish that her beauty fill your lives and lead you, and that her beauty be there in the thrill of your heart, in the light of your mind, and may it fill the wind in your sails.